This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to Cody and Gold. No Cody and Gold. They are jet setting off to California for Nick Schwartz's wedding. So it's Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, and Drew Nixon for the rest of this week. What's up, Logan?
What's going on?
What's going on with you, my friend?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just enjoying some nice mornings here on 96.5 The Fan. Yeah, Cody and Alex, I'm sure they're just having a rough go of it out there in sunny California, out there on the West Coast.
Well, Alex Gold's got that card money, man. You know what I'm saying? Well, I don't think he's got paid yet on it. It's got to go to auction house. How lucky is that with $10,000 to $20,000 card?
That's unbelievable. I mean, firstly,
he should pay for everything, to be honest.
Should. He absolutely should. He should. He should pay for the amount of sunscreen, the SPF roughly 1,000 that those two individuals are going to need in California over the next week. But good on him. First of all, Alex and I have fun because he's a Caitlin Clark fan, as am I. I like to say I was a Caitlin Clark
shocker.
Fan before
Iowa
it was.
Guy?
Yeah, I was. I like to say I was a Caitlin Clark fan before it was cool.
Yep.
But yeah, good on him to pick up a card like that. And one of the first things he said was like, "Do you want to buy it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah," because I just have $20,000 and just laying around. You know, just let me pull out my Swish fund for that one.
What's he gonna get paid, Drew? $10,000, $20,000. How much you make on that card?
Sorry.
How much is he making on that card?
I think it depends. It hasn't gotten graded yet, but if it's graded as a 10, he thinks he could get anywhere from like 15 to 20,000.
Does he have a timetable for like when that thing's going to get graded?
He sent it in. I don't know when it arrives or all that stuff, but I know that he sent the card. He's mailed the card in to the place to get graded.
What an unbelievable pull.
He was so worried about that too. He took today off that the other day. You were in there with Cody.
Hey, then he
ran up to the actual mail station, I think, to
Yeah, because it was out for delivery, and then it went back to the post office. Like, it was going to go back to the facility where it was just going to sit there all weekend. So
I just picture him like a kid on Christmas Friday. Like, Friday morning, he woke up 6 a.m. He's fully dressed, like, down to his socks and shoes. He's just sitting there peeking through the blinds, waiting around with bated breath for this card to arrive. And every car that drives by, you can just see it. Like, he immediately gets a little bit of excitement, and then the disappointment of that car not being a USPS van or something.
Yeah, the story's insane. I would be worried about it just as much as him, I would say, if I knew it was worth that much. But, I mean, hey, the fact that it's a Caitlin Clark card as well, she's a part of the indie community, my hometown, Indy Fever.
How dare you?
You're an indie guy, but a Bengals fan.
Correct, but I'm an Indiana Fever, and I'm an Indiana Pacers fan.
Why aren't you a Colts fan?
I stick to those roots. Because as a little kid, my favorite animal is a tiger. And, you know, the Bengals jerseys are the best, and I saw the helmets. And
you
got to
be kidding me.
No, I actually was rooting for the Chiefs, by the way.
That's true. Bing. That's true.
I rooted for the Chiefs.
You actually like Tigers, and that's why you're a Bengals fan?
Yeah, I rooted for the Chiefs when they blew the game to Andrew Luck. Sorry to remind people about that. I just had to throw that in there.
Hey, it was rough, man.
It's a good start to the show, guys.
That is one of the stranger fandoms that I've ever heard of. Like, I get a lot of heat from people because I am, unfortunately, after last night, I'll admit that I am a Boston Celtics fan, and but my reasoning is because when I was a little kid, my dad used to play video games all the time, and he'd play like NBA Live 2004, 2005 on our PC. And he always played with the Celtics because Boston had a guy named Ricky Davis on their roster who played at the University of Iowa. So I became a Celtics fan, but I didn't become a Celtics fan because I liked leprechauns. Like, that's a wild one.
I totally understand. Like, I I get if you like something and there's a team that is a part of what you like, then I think that fits. You know, if you pick a team early enough and you stick with them, then it goes.
Well,
I agree.
Did you like them back in the Boomer Esiason days, or were you even alive?
I wasn't alive then. I was born in 1995.
Man.
I was born when they stunk.
I forget you Tide Pod Eaters.
I was born like with the Keeley Smith.
Tide Pod Eaters.
I can't believe you can. Do you like the Detroit Tigers?
I used to like the Detroit Tigers actually a lot growing up. Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, I like Cabrera.
Ordóñez was my guy. I liked Maglio a
lot. Everybody's got a weird sports story, though. Huh? If he's with Tigers and... I just grew up in Kansas City? I like the local teams.
Yeah, I mean, and I was a Red Sox fan, too, growing up a lot because the Boston connection, not to mention the fact that I was a massive Dustin Pedroia fan. I watched every Red Sox game I possibly could in the early to mid 2000s because I loved Dustin Pedroia because he was the smallest guy on the field and he was an absolute superstar. I mean, Rookie of the Year, MVP. And then he ended up with the injuries and stuff. And when I got to high school is when the Royals started to get good again and you actually had to pay money for baseball cards versus
Shocker.
When I was a kid growing up in the Metro where cops would just hand out packs of Royals cards because nobody in their right mind would spend money on that.
Well, do you remember Chiefs cards?
Yes.
When police had the Chiefs cards?
Yes. But again, that was way less frequent for me as a kid because Chiefs.
Here's your Christian Okoye.
Yeah, well, and like the Chiefs, a lot of it when I was younger anyway, like when I was growing up, when I hit 6, 7, 8 years old, that was the Trent Green, Priest Holmes, Eddie Kennison, Tony Gonzalez years of the Chiefs,
the no
right?
defense times.
Yeah.
Great offense.
Casey Wigman and Brian Waters and Neil Smith and that tremendous deep offensive line that they had. But that was gone. But it was just very interesting to me how that shifted with like the Royals. They were always so bad when I was a kid and cops were constantly handing those out all the time.
Going to the Royals games was not always fun, Drew. I still remember I went to the 1980 World Series, man. That's old I am. I was a kid, very small kid, but I did go to the 1980 World Series and, of course, enjoyed 85 because it's kind of your prime.
Right.
When you go, you know, 12 years old, the team won the World Series, and they were very good. Matter of fact, the Royals had the highest payroll in baseball in the late 80s. Ewing Coffin, huh? The Royals had the highest payroll in all of baseball, and then all of a sudden the cable television boom. Remember, like the Turner and everything with the Braves? And WGN with the Cubs.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the Yes Network, the Yankees. And that's when cable television blew up. And that's when the Royals went back down. But they had the highest payroll in baseball in the late 80s.
That's unbelievable. You mentioned the Tigers, obviously a part of the AL Central banking. I know you think that not that the division is decided now.
Oh, it's done.
But you think it's down to those two teams? I mean, you're completely kicking Cleveland to the curb in this situation. Minnesota's out. Chicago White Sox, we already all know, is out anyways.
Well, a couple days ago when Jose Ramirez got hurt, he came back and played the next day. But when he got hurt, I was like, there goes that team.
Yeah.
There goes that. He's like it, man. And he's a tough dude, Jose Ramirez. But when he's a Royals killer. But when all of a sudden he was hurt, I was like, keep an eye on this one. Because that means how that team goes. It's not been their pitching staff. But yeah, I've always thought it was a two-horse race between the Royals and the Tigers this season going in. I remember I was sitting in for CDOT one of those first days of the season. Can you believe I've already played over 30 games? I mean, it's crazy. But
gone quick.
I was like, I see it's a two-horse race, Royals and Tigers. And everybody's like, well, what about Cleveland? They just beat the Royals 2 out of 3. Baseball's a marathon, not a sprint. Just talk to me in July. Talk to me in July, and we'll see how Cleveland's doing. I just look at what Detroit's doing. That's a young and hungry, up-and-coming team. Well, I like the Royals, man. Like, this pitching staff's not good. This pitching staff is world-class, man, the Royals got. And the thought is, will it fall apart at some point? I don't know. In previous years, it has. This has a chance to be the best pitching staff ever for the Royals. The weird thing is they hit 7 home runs, so it's not a power team, but they did the other day in Baltimore and they hit 7 home runs, but I don't know, Logan. I look at this team and, you know, you had 2 of the top 4 in the Cy Young voting last year as far as the Cy Young. So I don't, Lorenzen, I could see coming back to the pack. Bubich comes back to the pack. And I think the bats will start warming up, and they have, because in this streak since the 20th, since MJ got sent back down to AAA, They're actually hitting 288 as a team. It's second Major League Baseball. So the bats are starting to come around. I know last night, not a great example against America's booty called the White Sox, but they did get a win, and it was a shutout win. Now, five shutouts in the last 10 days for the Royals. That's insane.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd see a day where the Royals were shutting out that many teams in a row.
Yeah, 5 in 10 days is unbelievable, and it's because this pitching staff is loaded for bear everywhere imaginable, right? They're starters, obviously. And you're right, Lorenzen and Bubich, I don't expect those guys to be hovering around a 3 ERA for the entire season by any stretch of the imagination. But what makes this team so special is if you got a starter that can go five, right? He goes 5-6 innings. He gives up 2 or 3 earned runs.
11 strikeouts, man.
Yeah, you get just enough run support. You have so much confidence when you get into the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th inning when you can look at John Schreiber and Carlos Estevez and Lucas Ersig. Or good, I mean, who in their right mind would have looked at this pitching staff at the beginning of the year and assumed that a guy like Steven Cruz, a minor leaguer, is going to give you 9 innings of work to open up the season in the first 6 weeks and not give up a single earned run. I mean, he's been unreal. I mean, Daniel Lynch as a relief pitcher, as a guy who's been a starter coming up through the minors and has been a spot starter throughout his career, has now become a top tier middle relief guy with 17 and a third innings pitch. He's got a 1.04 ERA. This pitching staff is so good that it takes pressure off of the offense. And you're seeing some guys have tremendous starts to the year that are probably not sustainable, right? Is Mikel Garcia going to hit 320 all year? I don't think so, but he's probably the second best player on this Royals team so far this season. Is Drew
and
Waters
he's played
gonna,
long enough that we're not worried about the adjustments
yes,
being made like
exactly.
You were early on. So who knows? He could. It's not going to be this good, but I think he's past that phase of
yes.
people making
and
adjustments.
He's seeing the ball so well. I mean, 20 strikeouts and 121 ABs, which is the best at-bat to strikeout ratio of his career thus far, right? Is Drew Waters going to continue to hit at a 280 clip for the rest of the year? No. But I also don't think that Benny Pasquantino is going to continue to hit 190 the entire year. I don't believe Michael Massey is going to continue to hit below the Mendoza line. So you're seeing some guys that are playing maybe a little bit above their weight class.
Drew Waters.
Yes, and you're seeing some guys that are playing a little bit below their weight class, and I think once those things start to even themselves out a little bit, you'll continue to see this team be successful. I think that this is a very, very talented ball club. I believed it was a playoff team at the beginning of the year. I still believe that. I can't go so far as to say that this is a two-horse race in the AL Central. I'm with you that I believe the Royals and the Tigers are the two best teams in this division. I mean, somebody just mentioned in the text line, Cleveland has a run differential of minus 23, and they're 6 games above .500. Make that make sense. But there's something to be said for having a winning culture and having a winning mentality. The Cleveland Guardians have won this division 5 times since 2016. The Royals and Tigers, 0 times combined since 2016. So I can't help but look at this as a Guardians team that still has a lot of really good pieces from those past playoff teams. You mentioned Jose Ramirez as one of those guys. And while the pitching staff has left something to be desired, and
it's much, the bullpen is what carried him last year.
Yes.
And that bullpen's not been the same.
Yeah, Emmanuel
Clase and
those guys.
Actually, the Royals have a better
guys.
ERA in the bullpen than in the,
100%.
The Guardians.
They have the best ERA in the American League so far this year. And that's not even counting what the bullpen looks like. It might be the best pitching staff top to bottom in Major League Baseball, at least through the first 6 weeks of the year. And I just, again, it's so hard to determine, hey, it's a two-horse race in May because, and I, you know, I'm going to knock on wood. I'm not going to be that guy. I don't want to be taking the blame for it. But let's speak hypothetically and reasonably. If Bobby Witt Jr. was to get hurt tomorrow and end up on the 60-day IL, the Royals' chances of winning this season decrease dramatically, right? For the Detroit Tigers, if Tariq Skubal ends up with Tommy John tomorrow, their chances of making the postseason change dramatically. So if everything stays the same and everybody's healthy, I'm with you on it being a two-horse race.
That's just never sustainable. Somebody's going to get hurt. Some big name's going to go down. Somebody's going to miss some time, and it's going to dramatically change the makeup of what the AL Central will look like when we get into August and September.
Well, Kwan's a stud. We know he can hit. Stephen Kwan, man. Great in the outfield. The power numbers really haven't been there as much for Kwan, even though he's got four home runs this year. He's hitting .333. All right, Jose Ramirez is hitting .265. And then it's kind of a wasteland. Who's the next best hitter? Carlos Santana is hitting .219. Again, I understand the Royals not exactly knocking the cover off the ball either, but they're starting to come around. I just look at the Cleveland lineup, and I think about, you know, Jose Ramirez leaves that team. It would be more significant, I think, than Bobby Witt Jr. with the Royals, because I think the Royals have other hitters that would have to step up and make the difference. I can't say the same thing about Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland's an interesting lineup. They've seemed to have found a guy recently in Angel Martinez in center field. He's hitting .324, limited ABs. He's only had 68 times at the plate, but I mean, hitting .324 is pretty impressive. Kyle Manzardo is a guy that's never going to wow you with his batting average, but he's got a ton of pop. 8 long balls, which is top 10 in the American League. He's got 20 ribbies so far this year. So I agree with you. Jose Ramirez brings a lot to this Guardians team, certainly from a leadership standpoint and consistency and what he brings as that guy at the hot corner. But without Bobby Witt Jr., this Royals team is, what, a .220, .230 ball club batting average wise. I look at it from the standpoint of I think Bobby Witt Jr. provides more offensively for the Royals than Jose Ramirez does for the Guardians.
I just look at Jose and think, That's all that team. I understand people look at the Royals and think Bobby Witt Jr. I agree.
Right.
I mean, obviously they're both special players, but you think Vinny would step things up a little bit. Sal Perez, you know what he can do. Not doing it right now, but he's starting, you know, to come around a little bit more at the plate. I just think the Royals would have more pieces going forward than if a Jose Ramirez, which he doesn't ever get hurt, which he did get hurt the other day, but
right,
he went back and played. So who knows? Kwan's a stud too. I get that.
But. Yeah. And it's interesting. Somebody in the text line just mentioned this and I wanted to bring it up. Who are we to discount or count out the Minnesota Twins already? I know that they're a team. They're 5 games below .500. They're sitting at 4th in the division. But this Twins team has some interesting sides to it as well, because they've got some guys on their roster that are not hitting the ball well at all right now. I mean, Harrison Bader's hitting .280, which I think is, you know, right around his ballpark for his career. I mean, Byron Buxton's hitting .260 right now. Carlos Correa is hitting .216. Can we honestly sit here and say that when we get into August and September, Carlos Correa is still going to be a .216 hitter? I don't see it. That team is too talented. He is too talented a player, in my opinion, to continue to hit .216. He looks to me like he's .260, .270, .280 hitter for his career. So I think that the Twins are going to get better. And I don't know. I just continue to believe that this division is a lot more open than we think it is, although I will 1,000% agree with you. On paper, through the first 6 weeks of the year, I don't care what the record says, the Tigers and the Royals are the two best teams in this division, and I believe that those are two teams that are probably in the top 8 or 9 best teams in Major League Baseball so far.
Based on how the Royals have been playing, too, it's a nice time to be playing against the Chicago White Sox, you know, where you get to take advantage of the
America's booty call, baby.
Of how bad they are as a baseball team.
Yeah, right, just now, in the midst of an 11 of 13, and then you get 4 games on the schedule at home against the Chicago White Sox. Yeah, you'll take that every day of the week, man.
Shutout after shutout, maybe trying to keep that streak going, Bink, a little bit, you know?
12 of 13, they beat them last year. So you thought, okay, where are these wins going to come from? I thought maybe Minnesota. Again, Minnesota's so up and down, man. They're a streaky team. They'll win 7 in a row, and they'll lose 7 in a row. That's just who they are. There's no consistency with that team, so I don't
There's a little bit of that with the Royals right now, right?
I get it, but Minnesota, whenever you expect them to be really good, they're bad.
Yeah.
And whenever you expect them to be bad, they're really good. So that was the concern this year is, okay, they're going to be much better than people think they are, but I'm not buying into the Twins. Or the Royals beat them 3 out of 4, and I get it. Small sample size, good with the marathon, but they play them 13 times during the year. And I thought, well, White Sox would be better. Believe it or not, the White Sox have 5 wins and 7-plus runs. That's tied for most in baseball. You would never imagine that. They're still not a very good team. They do think they pitch better than they did last year. But where are those wins going to come from? You got to bully a team. Last year, the Royals finished 1 game ahead of Seattle to make the postseason. There was 12 wins against the White Sox.
Thank you, Chicago.
So where's that coming from? And Minnesota, they beat them 3 out of 4. They had a losing record against the Twins last year. The Royals were 6-7. I think that's going to be flip-flopped this year, so maybe those wins come against them. But the Chicago White Sox are playing perfect for you, man. This was a team, the Royals are struggling last year at the beginning of the season. They go to Chicago, sweep the White Sox, and go on a 7-game winning streak. But the White Sox, that 3 a.m. girl, man, guaranteed 100% you're going home with her. That's the Chicago White Sox. And speaking of the White Sox, their City Connects, you seen their new ones? They had the Southside ones.
Yeah, the Bulls tribute.
Yeah, which is a joke. The fact that that crap old team wears Bulls gear pisses me off, to be honest with you. I'm not a Bulls fan either. But here's the thing, though. If you have a team like the White Sox that put the S in suck, they set a major league record for losses, they're not good. And they're representing and kind of honoring the Bulls team. Like, that's a team that won 6 rings, man. That team had Michael Jordan. And you're telling me that team is wearing red and black on Friday nights honoring the Chicago Bulls? You can't do it, man.
I know, but it's not like the Bulls are playing great either now, though.
It doesn't matter. It's honoring
the White Sox used to be good, though.
Yeah, but it's honoring the great Bulls of the past. I'm not just doing it for the current Bulls.
The White Sox used to be good. You're correct. What year was that they used to be good?
2005?
Or 1917 when they won their second most recent World Series.
In fairness, when's the last time the Bulls were good? Derrick Rose, but they didn't win anything.
It's honoring the world champion Bulls that won 6.
But Bink,
and the only time they didn't win is when Michael Jordan was going and playing baseball.
I know that, but
the White Sox organization, yeah, I may add. Yeah. So it kind of does make a little bit of sense
now
that they're paying homage.
NASCAR, by the way.
I don't have a problem with MJ at all, or I don't have a problem with the White Sox doing it.
Why? They're representing a good team, a championship caliber team, and you got these clowns wearing their jerseys honoring the team.
You know what I think the White Sox.
Seriously, why would you want that? If the Chiefs, you want someone really bad to represent the Chiefs? Like, they've won 3 of the last 5 Super Bowls. Do you want a really bad team representing the Chiefs? I'd be pissed. Like, if the Royals were still in their 100-loss streak and they were wearing like Royal or Chiefs City Connects,
they're paying homage. They're all right.
They're paying homage, but they're bad.
Yeah, there's multiple, right?
I see
Jordan's connection with the White Sox. The owner, somebody just mentioned in the text line, and I was getting ready to bring that up. Jerry Reinsdorf owns both organizations.
I understand that. Have the Cubs do it.
And what else were the White Sox supposed to do? Just invert their jerseys and go with an all-black look, pay homage to the Black Sox? I think that would have been fun. That would have been fitting.
L's on the front of their jersey.
There you go.
I mean, they
honor what they do best. Losing games.
They are very good at that.
Why would the team do that, though? Like, you're not going to... Yeah, we're going to put L's on our jersey because we stink.
It makes more sense than Bulls.
Yeah, I guess there's some fairness
L's to that. Makes a lot more sense than the Bulls.
Hey, look, I totally get it. I totally get it. We're going to switch transitions real quick because I saw this, Bank and Logan, and I think you guys will appreciate this as college football.
And I know they're owned by Reinsdorf. Stop that. I've been an elevator for Reinsdorf. Very nice guy, by the way.
As college football connoisseurs and people who watch college football a lot, Brett Yormark got a contract extension. I don't know if you guys saw this. Through 2030, makes complete sense. He's really kind of saved the Big 12 in terms of his aggressiveness to get the Arizona schools and Colorado and Utah, which want to leave the Big 12, but forget Utah, honestly, at this rate, because they can try to go somewhere else. It's not going to work out for them as well as it could with the Big 12 and BYU as well. But is there anything that, based on the future of it, he's set them up for success, but is it enough to try to salvage, to keep them afloat? For now it is, I think. But the way that we're looking in college football, like him getting this extension makes complete sense. He's done a great job. Is there anything else that he needs to keep doing to keep the Big 12 where they're at in terms of their position with the rest of the power conferences?
That's an interesting question. I think that what Brett Yormark, excuse me, has done such a good job of is he's really attacked sports that maybe the other leagues don't look at as much. Like the Big Ten and the SEC and even the ACC to some extent are so hyper-focused on what's going on the gridiron, college football, right? It is the bell cow. It is the money maker in college athletics nowadays. But I'll give Brent Yormark a ton of credit for finding schools that are strong in other sports, right? Finding a program like Houston, which doesn't traditionally have a really strong football program, but their basketball program, outstanding, as evidenced by the fact they just won a national championship. Their baseball program is traditionally very, very good. BYU has a strong basketball program, and their football has been all right. Utah is strong in football. Arizona State are traditionally basketball or Arizona State baseball sort of programs, wrestling. So yeah, I think you're finding programs that fly a little bit more under the radar because their football isn't their coup de grace of their athletic departments. And so you bring those guys in and it allows for, I mean, the Big 12 has become the best basketball conference in America. With the addition of some of these other schools, with the addition of BYU and Houston, along with already having programs like Kansas and Iowa State and others, it's just raised the profile of basketball, and that allows you to supplement a little bit of what's going on the football side, because the Big 12 knows better than to believe that they were going to get Oregon or USC or UCLA to come play in the Big 12.
Especially,
it just didn't make sense football wise, monetarily. It didn't make sense. You dance with the one that brought you, and the Big 12 is a basketball conference, and they're rolling with it that way.
And thank God for Arizona State making the playoffs in football.
Well, I mean, somebody was going to. It just happened to be Arizona State. Like, I mean, it would have been Iowa State, or it would have been them. I'm sure Logan appreciates it.
Kim
was not
Scataboo.
Iowa State.
I do. I very much appreciate that it wasn't Iowa State. That would have that might have put me in a coma if Iowa State would have made the college football playoff before Iowa did.
The fact too that he's done a really nice job since, because everybody thought once Oklahoma and Texas left, holy crap, this is the end of the Big 12. But he jumped on the Arizona schools quickly and. I mean, the way that it was interesting.
Which is good, because they were just sitting out there. They actually wanted to come here years ago, but they didn't pay attention to that. Bowlesby's kind of.
And them getting Colorado back in the Big 12 was also nice. I think traditionally a lot of people would love to see Nebraska, of course, back in the Big 12, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But him being able to grab the bull by the horns and say, you know what? Texas is gone, Oklahoma's gone, and we're not going to go down like this. This is not how we're not going to go out like the Pac-12 did. We're going to figure this thing out. And, you know, for better or for worse, they might not be as talented as a college football conference, but from top to bottom, they're one of the deepest conferences in college football in terms of competitiveness. Like, you could have gone 1-9 last year and there were competitive games all across the board. Not the most talented teams, but it's one of the most interesting conferences. I think it's funny. Some people call it America's conference because tradition, good rivalry still, a realignment to survive, but they're bringing schools into the conference that have traditionally
been
with them beforehand.
The SEC is America's conference.
The ACC is?
SEC.
ACC. The America's Conference is the Big 12. The South's Conference is the SEC.
You look at the NFL draft numbers.
The SEC is America's.
It has nothing to do with the NFL. It's not about pro stuff. It's about.
The SEC sets the bar. Yarmark is great for the Big 12. Yarmark has done great because he understands the forward thinking. He brings in money. He understands the way sports are going. He has that background. Bowlesby was an idiot. Yeah. You don't let Texas and Oklahoma just all of a sudden leave and you didn't hear about it. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't even hear.
I mean,
he was talking.
Money is the reason it happened.
How can you not hear that they're leaving? That was insane.
Well, and you can look back on this and, like, we'll see how things go for Texas and for Oklahoma and specifically, but for a school like Texas A&M, they're good, but Texas A&M legitimately right now, you could say, doesn't really have a shot at winning the SEC like they do. But do they have a really good shot at winning the SEC? Not really. Oklahoma?
They run edge rushers.
Not really. I mean,
you should know this, Drew.
I get why you go, and it's for money, and that's why Texas and Oklahoma went and why Texas A&M went. But if you look at your opportunities to win and take advantage of it now with everybody making the playoff, I don't know if they'll regret it necessarily, but you could look back and say, well, maybe we could have a few extra conference titles, a little bit more to add to our name when we're going to recruit guys, as opposed to if we were in the SEC and just say, hey, we're in a big conference. We go 7-5 every year. We're Oklahoma. You know, we go 8-4. We're in the SEC. They could be saying we're 10-2.
It is tough to say after the SEC in football and the way they played basketball.
That's fair. I know. I'm just saying that I think that there's reason for schools like Kansas and Kansas State, I think really in particular, to be really happy with where they're at because, especially football-wise, K-State is always, from now on until, as far as I'm concerned, Chris Kiman leaves, they're going to be in the Big 12 title conversation in football. They're always going to be there, and that's something I would love.
But if you don't start making the playoffs, you have issues. Because with the expanded playoffs, you run out of excuses.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, no question. I think going back to the America's Conference thing, I believe the SEC is America's Conference in the same way that the Dallas Cowboys are America's team. Because if you're the SEC or you're an SEC fan, you love him. Everybody else hates your guts. Just throwing that out there from the word go.
The biggest difference is they actually win stuff. So that's the biggest difference.
That also is true. I mean, do they though?
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue the SEC point a little bit. If we're talking beyond.
Did the SEC win the national championship in football this year?
In basketball, they did.
No. As a matter of fact, did they even make the Final Four? I don't think they did. Did the SEC make the Final Four?
So you had
Texas did. I'm sorry.
Texas, yeah.
So you had that was it.
Texas. Texas is in the SEC. Sure.
Technically.
If we want to go that route, I'm just saying, I'm just a Big Ten guy throwing shade, so that's just me.
I'm also
me,
a Big Ten guy. I think you can make a case, Logan, that after Alabama and Georgia,
Yeah, and somebody in the text line said you're making the discussion, the argument about Texas A&M, like, will they really ever have what it takes to win the SEC? Somebody says... is there a similar argument to be made for the Missouri Tigers?
100%. If you were Missouri, you would be. If Missouri was sitting where they were, and then we're going to have to go to a break because we're definitely late. If Missouri was in the Big 12, they would be the favorite probably year after year after year.
With Eli Drinkwitz and what this Mizzou team has done football wise,
they would be.
I agree.
I can't wait for this football season. It's going to be crazy. Coming up next, though, 20% through the season, have our expectations wavered at all for the Kansas City Royals? Welcome back to Cody and Gold. Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon. What the hell is this?
Some bomb bag music?
It's nice.
Pretty.
It's just like little vibes.
Chill. Yeah.
It's just some vibes music.
Brings the blood pressure down, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like love talk.
It brings the blood pressure down as you're choking down a Red Bull over there.
It's right, Logan. It's a PED. Seriously. For radio?
Oh, okay.
I'm totally PED. It's not Blue Chew. Mr. Chew It and Do It.
That's right. Chew It and Do It.
Turn oh no into oh yeah. Drew Nixon passes them at your ears.
That was a nice little Kool-Aid Man reference.
He passes them out before ears. He passes them out before every show. He gets us ready to go. Here's your Blue Chew, Bank. There you go.
That's right.
Get Logan his.
Get fired up for the show, Bank.
That's right. We had NASCAR this weekend, man.
We do.
The Crown Jewel's coming to Kansas Speedway. You been out there, Logan?
I have. I have been to. I haven't been out there in, probably 12, 15 years.
Really?
It's been a while. Man. But like when I was a kid growing up, like junior high, early high school, my parents and my aunt and uncle got really into NASCAR. And they used to go all the time. They would go out to the Nationwide race and the NASCAR race out at the Speedway. I have never actually been to a NASCAR race.
Oh, like a cup race?
I've been out to Kansas Speedway five or six different times for the Nationwide series, back when it was the Nationwide series, but I've never been to the NASCAR series, which is kind of interesting. I've been out to Newton and watched a couple of Nationwide races out there, but my parents used to go all the time. They go to the NASCAR races at Kansas Speedway. They went to the Indy 500 a couple of times, and I was a huge Matt Kenseth fan when I was a kid.
DeWalt 17, that's right.
Yes, my bus number was number 17. So that's the bus I rode growing up, and it was a yellow number 17. Matt Kenseth drove the yellow number 17. I became a Matt Kenseth fan because of that.
Don't criticize his fandom because of that, Bink, you know?
No, I'm not. I criticize yours, Drew, obviously. What's better, Indy 500 or a NASCAR race?
As
you're from Indy.
As I might be ashamed to say this, I've never been to an Indy 500 race. I've never been to an Indy 500 before. I've covered it. Actually, I won a contest in high school, and I went and covered it. I've been to practice. I've been to quali. Never been to an Indy 500. Only been to Brickyard 400s at Indy.
But you have not missed a NASCAR race at the Speedway, I don't think.
Here in
you
Kansas,
all the
no.
time. You love it. I love it, too.
I've gone every time.
We'll probably have a driver later. It's fun, man. It's one of those experiences. And
you feel the thunder in your chest? Oh, yeah. It's great.
They take care of everybody. It's just a different sport. And especially, they want their sport covered. They appreciate it. I mean, they'll stand down there during the national anthem with the drivers, being the pit. But they want their sport covered. They want to have access. The drivers are great, man. They're freaking awesome.
I mean, it might be the best fan experience as well in terms of you can bring your own beer. You can bring your own snacks. You can bring anything that you want, essentially. as long as it's not a weapon in there, to eat, snack on, drink, whatever it is. They don't ask you anything. They don't ID you. They just check the bag. Okay, you're good. Go on in.
You know, at Kaufman, you can actually bring food in. I don't know if people
really
knew that. Yeah, I think you can bring food in.
Are you sure about this?
Pretty sure about
so when
that.
So when I go to the K next this year, I'm going to try to bring
look
food
it up,
in.
But look at a text line, I'll tell you, but I'm pretty sure you can bring food into Kauffman Stadium. Okay. Not beer.
Yeah, you can bring food in a clear plastic bag no larger than 1 gallon, and the food should resemble individual portions. Additionally, okay. You can bring in 1 liter or smaller unopened plastic water bottles.
There you go, Drew.
That is good to know. My wife that and I are taking my mother and father-in-law and my brother and sister-in-law and my niece and nephew to the Royals game on Sunday. So
nice. That's
good to know.
You can't do it, I don't think, at Chiefs games. I don't think you can.
Yeah, because it's the NFL bank.
Yeah.
I always thought they should do beer for free and charge you $20 to pee. Like, just keep giving you all the free beer. And the minute you have to go into the bathroom, it's $20.
But hey, people still pay the money.
It's like those bars you used to go into. You pay like $20, right? And they put a bracelet on.
There you go.
And the minute you broke the seal, they cut that little bracelet off.
It's not going to stop until people just stop going, Bink, which is not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I think people wear Depends.
The problem is that there's going to be those people who are going to take full advantage of that. And inevitably, the workers at Arrowhead are going to end up having to clean up excrement.
Text line 913-586-7965. Would you go to Arrowhead for free beer if you had to wear Depends? Like, would you wear Depends and get free beer?
That's a diaper.
913-586-7965. Would you wear Depends if there was free beer at Arrowhead?
It's 10:40 and we're asking this question.
Are we going to a football game?
It's 11:40 in the East Coast.
Conducting a filibuster. I'm confused. Why are we wearing diapers?
I'm curious. I'm curious how many people would wear Depends if they got free beer at Arrowhead.
I don't know. I'm sure now people are going to text, and I'm sure some people would.
Somebody in the text line just said they were at a Royals game, and a woman was eating a Chipotle bowl. Do they serve Chipotle? I don't think they serve Chipotle.
If it's one serving,
right?
If it's one serving,
that's crazy.
But what's considered one
serving? Shout out to the Royals for letting you do that.
A small person eating one serving, or a very large person eating one serving? Because that's two different things.
That is a fair point.
Somebody said there would be diapers everywhere on the upper level.
Yes, there would be.
Jeez.
I'm for that. It's great.
So do you think there'd be a better chance that they sell out?
They always sell out. No,
I'm talking like Royals. If we're talking at the K.
If the Royals sort of allowed people to drink free, but they had to wear a diaper.
Do you think they would be more likely to sell out?
Probably.
Isn't that sad? Speaking of the Royals.
People like beer, man.
Speaking of the Royals. So we're through 20% of the season, a little bit over 20% of the season. Logan, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. I don't think my expectations have changed. I don't know if yours has been either. I'd love to hear your opinion on the text line. What do you guys think in terms of expectation for the Royals going in? I think mine was, at least the three of us on the, like Alex and Cody as well, was compete for the division, make the playoffs for sure, maybe even win the division, I think was the expectation, or I think that might have been the goal for each of us. Obviously still attainable at this rate. I don't think things have changed based on how the last week and a half has gone. Before, the boat was getting rocked a little bit, but now I think we're back on track to fit those expectations, at least on my side of things. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Yeah, I would say my expectations have not changed. I said going into the year, I thought this was an 86-88 win baseball team. I always go back to this stat. In the last 50, 60 years of Major League Baseball, there have been either 14 or 15 instances of a team winning 30 games or more year over year, right? The Royals going from 56-23 to 86 wins last year. Of those 14 or 15 teams, only two of them actually improved again in that third season after winning 30 or more games from the previous year, that following season to actually improve upon it. So I went with an 86 win season because I'm like, that's the same record you had a year ago, right? You're not better. You're not worse. I don't think there was anything that the Royals did during the offseason that really shifted the momentum all that much. Although Carlos Estevez has absolutely shocked me to begin this year. I knew he was an all-star caliber closer, but he has been so damn good. And Steven Cruz and some of these other guys we did not see coming have been so good. But you've also seen, at least through the first 6 weeks of the season, some regression from some guys, right? Obviously, Hunter Renfroe, the Royals would be better off just DFAing him and saving a roster spot. Salvador Perez is hitting the ball better now, but he got off to a slow start. Vinny got off to a slow start. Michael Massey, after hitting nearly 280 last year, is off to a slow start. So I think that you've seen some guys play above expectations and you've seen guys play below expectations, just like we talked about in the first segment. I am still completely comfortable with where I sit in this Royals team being an 86 to 88 win ball club. I still see the Guardians somewhere around 84 to 88 wins as well. And the Detroit Tigers, I see them probably around 86 to 90, 91 wins even. And I think that the Tigers ultimately win the division. The Royals finish second and make the wild card. That's kind of where I saw it at the beginning of the year. My expectations haven't changed.
Well, the one thing about it is, yes, they didn't exactly light it up with the free agency, but can guys take the next step? Because I think Bobby Witt could just go up another stratosphere. And unfortunately, Aaron Judge is sitting here hitting 414. So you think I could take over MVP, which I always thought he could, but it's going to be tough. Let's see, Aaron needs to come back to the pack just a little bit from what he's doing, but no question about it. But Vinny, I thought Vinny would take the next step. Clearly, this wasn't the year for that, but I love what he did last year. The Royals were the only team in baseball that three guys when they hit 70 RBI last year. Mm-hmm. They were the only team that had three guys over 80 RBI. The only team that had three guys over 90 RBI. And they would have been for over 100, but Vinny got hurt and ended with 97. Yeah. Clearly would have had over 100 ribs. Him, Perez, and Bobby Witt Jr. I like that. And this team now with Renfroe and what you see, it's going to be different because they're going to be buyers. Like they're going to get better. Like this team that you see is going to get better with the bats. I think the progression starts to happen. As you said, they're hitting 288 as a team in the last 12 days. It's second best mark in baseball. I think they'll get hotter and hotter. You saw the 7 home runs in Baltimore. They hit a franchise record, which is crazy. This team hit a franchise record in home runs. That's insane. You saw going down, sweeping the Rays. Yes, 2 of the 5 wins where they've had over 8 runs or 4 runs have come against Colorado, which is fine. Keeping the bad teams down. But the pitching, I'm not worried about. I think the pitching is going to continue to be excellent. That's what you got to win with. As Dayton Moore says, that's the currency of baseball is what the pitching is. And Noah Cameron, can you flip him eventually for a hitter? Maybe you don't. Maybe you keep on team. Kyle Wright, I'll give people, hey, keep an eye on this guy. This guy led Major League Baseball in wins 2 years ago. He's been hurt. It was nice the Royals went and picked him up, but that's kind of a piece that people are talking about. That is a very good piece. Kyle Wright that could be part of this rotation, to be honest with you, and definitely in this bullpen. But that guy was a stud with the Atlanta Braves. The Royals took a chance on him because that's what you have to do if you're the Kansas City Royals. You got to take a chance on certain guys that they can come back and, you know, be a premium guy. And Kyle Wright's one of those guys that had his first start for Northwest Arkansas a couple of days ago. But keep an eye on that guy because he's only going to join this team at some point.
Right.
But they're going to get better. So what you see now, this team will get better. And that's one good thing about the Royals. I had about 88 wins this year. I just look at a team that's going to continue to get better. And I think JJ will kind of look at this team and realize what he's got and say, you know, we got to pick up runs. We got to hear maybe fast track Jack or whatever you got to do to get him to the major leagues. But just understanding, but you got to know when to push all in. It's like Billy Beane with the A's. He pushed all in. It didn't work out. Remember the Royals beat him in that wild card game, but he had pushed all in because they went out and got everybody to be on that team. And, you know, to some extent, the Royals kind of did too because they went through 5 left-handed pitchers when they built up like Cueto and Zobrist and that for the Royals. Yeah. But they, in a way, pushed all in.
Yes.
And it worked out because they won. And that's the ultimate thing. If you're on push all in, you got to win. But I can see the Royals understanding what the window is because the window in professional sports can close really quick and do what the Chiefs do and continue to be good every year. That's the asterisk. That doesn't happen. Look at the 49ers. I mean, there was a team that had their window open paying Brock Purdy, the last pick in the draft, so you could pay everybody else because you're not paying your quarterback anything. Well, now they got to pay your quarterback. So now things start to change. And now you sit there and get rid of a lot of talent in the offseason. So that window closed. The 49ers are right there, man. They went to those 2 Super Bowls against the Chiefs. They were right there, but they didn't kick it in. They didn't do what needed to be done. They didn't win it. Chiefs did.
Yeah.
They didn't, so they're changing. I look at the Royals the same way. Like, all right, there's this window with this great pitching. Are you ever going to have pitching this good again? And you got to tell yourself, maybe not, because it could be the best pitching this franchise has ever seen. And you have to take advantage of that. Like, you have to realize this isn't coming around anymore. This is still a small market team, the only small market team to win a World Series. So it can be done because they proved it could be done. Those 15 Royals are celebrating 10 years, proved it can be done.
No question.
So just kind of understanding who and what you are and then pushing all in when you have the opportunity. Because if you don't, you could be the Niners.
Yeah. You know, the Niners are a good example of that. I hate to do this to you, Drew, but the Bengals are another good example of that. They have,
well, they've been a disaster in the draft and everything else. Didn't make the playoffs.
Well,
they had their window.
They made the Super Bowl. They had their window open before they had to pay Jamar and T. Higgins and Joe Burrow, and now those three guys are eating up nearly half of your total salary.
And that was dumb.
Your defense has been completely and utterly decimated. I don't know what you're going to do with Trey Hendrickson.
Disrespected.
That's beside the point. Kyle Wright is an interesting case study. Because obviously the Royals have taken similar paths with other guys, right? They took a chance on a guy like Seth Lugo, who was traditionally a relief pitcher and has dealt with some pretty serious injuries throughout his career, dating back to when he was in college. And it's been an absolute hit, right? The Royals make a trade with the Texas Rangers at the deadline for Aroldis Chapman for Cole Reagans, a former high draft pick who had come off Tommy John surgery. Is it going to work? He might be a top five pitcher in all of baseball. Four games this season with 10 plus strikeouts. There's no other starter in Major League Baseball that has more than two. That is Cole Reagans to begin this season. He's become the ace on this staff. So Kyle Wright could be another one of those guys. And when you look at this Royals team, if they become buyers at the deadline, if they go for an outfielder, and I'm looking at a guy right now in an organization that is obviously not a winner, that is notorious for trading away top pieces rather than pay them, Kyle Stowers with the Miami Marlins. He's hitting .310 so far this season. That's top 15 in Major League Baseball. He's got 25 RBIs, top 15 in Major League Baseball. His OBP is at up over .380. He plays left and right field. That's a perfect corner outfielder. If you're comfortable with, you know, Drew Waters in right, you got Isbell in center. You can put a guy like him in left field. He hits for average. He drives in runs. That could completely change the makeup of this team when you look at India hitting first, Bobby hitting second, Vinny third, Salvi fourth. You've got Mikel right now hitting fifth, and a guy like Stowers hitting in the sixth hole. 1 through 6 of your lineup becomes very, very dangerous very, very fast.
And the one thing I do like about this team, these 3-0 wins, you can look at them and say, this gets a White Sox, whatever. But it's just how tough they are, man. When you're scratching across and winning games that close, that margin of victory, you know, can be taken away from you so quickly, but they're winning those games. It's like those Chiefs 1-point wins or one score wins. They were important because it showed the kind of team they were. It was tough, tough makeup, mentally tough. So that stuff helps. By the way, the 10 plus strikeouts, this is the most games with 10 plus strikeouts in Royals history from Nick Capel from the Royals PR office. Kevin Apier leads the way with 21, but 275 games started. Zach Greinke has 9 games such, 222 games started. Cole Reagans already has 9. 51 games started. That is insanity.
He's almost got double-digit strikeouts in every fifth start of his career.
That's why in the Verns,
insane.
On Vern, whenever we do the lock, I always go with the plus strikeouts with Cole Reagans. Always find out where that number is, if it's +7, +8, whatever direction is, and go with that direction. By the way, the text line has responded, Logan, about the depends.
Seems like some people are on board. They're with you on this
says
one.
It's never too early for a beer and depends. But yes, I 100% would. I had to pay $15 for a tall boy yesterday. Sign me up for the diaper. So the people are willing to wear the diaper for
you
free
know,
beer.
I haven't worn a diaper since I was potty trained. And
me
I
either.
Probably will not wear a diaper again until I am forced to by a doctor when I reach my elder years.
If it's free Coors Light, I might.
I'll be completely honest in this. You know, I may get some heat for this. I'm not much of a drinker. I talked about this on Friday with Cody when we brought in the folks over there and they made us some coffee inspired cocktails.
I
tried. I gave it my all and I stomached as much of it as I could. But I'm just not a huge drinker. I'm just not.
You know who's really not big is Drew. Drew Nixon. Here's the thing about Drew. He will drink cocktails.
Okay.
But he doesn't drink beer. Matter of fact, not this 4th of July, but the previous 4th of July, Drew, I think, drank his first Coors Light when I was in here. Because he shot a Roman candle out of his butt, which is the first time he's ever shot a firework. And then he slammed the Coors Light the first time he's ever done it.
I didn't slam a Coors Light. I took a sip and poured the rest out and down the sink. And
but
then
you shot a Roman candle.
I did shoot a Roman candle.
Out of your butt?
No.
Okay. Thanks for clarification.
I shot it outside right out there.
You went right out of here and
shot it in the parking lot.
And he drank a beer the same day. He's like hitting all these marks.
And I felt the exact same as I did. I felt no more American than I did before. So sorry to all those people who said yes. I said that I would feel that way.
You didn't hear the American flag screech while you were drinking that beer and shooting the Roman candle?
She had Joey Chestnut on. Just
you need to shoot some mortar shells. That'll make you feel American, I assure you. Okay. I worked a fireworks stand for like 6 years when I was in high school and college. Okay. I can set you up. I know what's good and what's not when it comes to shooting off fireworks on the 4th.
We had J&M Fireworks endorsing the draft coverage. It was actually a fireworks company doing our draft coverage. It's awesome. Big thanks to them. Coming up next, we'll talk some Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the Chiefs Red Hour coming up at 11:30. But next, we'll look at the Chiefs because that's the first day of phase two for the Kansas City Chiefs. And then phase three will be the OTAs and stuff like that. But since we're a week away from it, your favorite Chiefs draft choices, which rookie could start for this team next?